Welcome to Week Question and Learn. This is Tom Pies. We're honored today to have James W. Grunke, 25 years of experience in economic development, many leadership roles, an incredible resume. He is the president and the CEO of the Erie Regional Chamber, and should I say, in growth partnership
sure.
at the end of
or,
that? Okay.
Or either.
Since September 17th. So, boy, a year went by without us looking, right, Jim?
Right. It was a blink of an eye. It's hard to believe it's already been a year.
Well, you had an impressive committee, including Kathy Dahlkemper and Chancellor Ralph Ford, all looking at your resume, and we're glad you're here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I'm here as well.
Yeah. Well, you've been a proactive member of the community. We hear about you all the time. Your newsletter comes to me all the time, and you're always involved in different things. But can we go back about how you came to Erie? Where were you prior? Can we ask that?
So I was working previously. My last job as CEO was in Missoula, Montana. But my home has always been in Boise, Idaho.
Okay. Well, that's quite a spread in the middle of the country.
Huh? It is, yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you were involved in economic development projects in those
That's
areas?
Right. So I've started in economic development. I'm embarrassed to say how long ago it was. I think it was around 1992 was the first time I got involved in it. So,
wonderful.
And I've worked all over the western states, and it's been a new experience for me to come out to this part of the country.
Really? Okay. Good. So you were in Atlanta, though, too, right?
So I worked for an Atlanta-based company.
Okay.
What they did was they helped community craft economic development strategies and then really raise the money to implement that. So I worked in economic development, then I spent 5 years telling communities how they should do economic development, and then I got back into doing it again. And I've liked both of them, but it was good to see if what I was telling people to do was actually true.
Your perspective of the Northeast compared to, say, where you are.
Well, you know, it was completely different to me. This is the first time I've lived anywhere in my entire life that I can't see a mountain,
that was a
little different. However, the wooded nature of the landscape here is so breathtaking that it more than makes up for the absence of mountains. Erie's been a really good fit for me, both personally and professionally. People like to say you came to Erie at the right time, and I often kind of flippantly answer, well, yes, that's why I came. I saw that. But it actually was the right time for me to. Erie needed, or at this time, someone like me with a different perspective who's been in other distressed communities and been part of their rebirth. And that's really a rewarding part of the work.
From Boise to Oklahoma to Erie, Pennsylvania. That's
yeah.
quite a history. Well, you look very happy about being here. You look like you have a challenge. And how have you framed this now that you've been sitting here, not sitting here, mm-hmm. working here, and you've been quite diligent for the number of months that you've been in Erie?
Well, I've always been very clear from the very first time I came to Erie that if they really want to be serious about economic development, they have to properly resource it. They have just never had the necessary funding to be successful at economic development.
Okay, the magic word, money.
It always comes down to money, doesn't
it? Yeah.
So my community, when I worked in Missoula, Montana, for my small little economic development group, which was there five of us, we had an annual budget of about $1 million a year just dedicated to economic development. In Erie, Pennsylvania, there's nothing like that dedicated to economic development. I've spent most of the year working to get that funding available.
This last year. This has been a major effort.
This has been a major initiative to develop a strategy for economic development. What are going to be the goals? How are we going to measure success? And then go out and raise the net money necessary to do it. And I'd say, you know, we're underway a fairly large capital campaign so we can be successful. We conducted a feasibility assessment in the first part of this year to say if we were to craft an economic development strategy, what would it need to look like, and how much money do we think could be raised to do it? And so we've been in the process of kind of following the recommendations that came out of that assessment. We hired an outside firm to come out and do an independent assessment so people could speak candidly. They conducted about 70 interviews with community leaders. Simultaneously with that, we also did, and I apologize for the length of the title of this, we did a targeted industry analysis and competitive realities report. So, which means
it stands for something. I couldn't write it down.
Targeted industry analysis.
Yeah.
We need to understand what industries does Erie have a competitive advantage in as opposed to the rest of the nation? And we came up with six industries. Just because Erie has a competitive advantage, how do we compare with other communities in the country? And while we compare very favorably in our target industries, we favor very unfavorably in our competitive realities, which means do we have buildings, land available for industry or businesses to come here and prosper? And the answer today is no. If we had a company coming here to say, hey, I'd like to set up a manufacturing facility in Erie, Pennsylvania, generally they look, whether they want this or not, kind of the minimum threshold is 50 acres of
50.
Yeah, 50. And we wouldn't have one parcel that we could point to that's 50. We could barely maybe cobble together
20.
This is
20 in the acres. City or
on
really,
the
county?
I would take the whole county.
Okay.
I mean, there are some spots that could be developed, but there's nobody that's currently developing. And so in the economic development game, it's what do you have today, not what do you have tomorrow.
There's not even 50 acres when you think about it. I'm imagining now from my memory on West 12th Street even.
Not that could be assembled and ready to go.
Not to the ground, so to speak.
But yeah. We do see some areas that that have potential to get back into production. And so we really are going to work very closely. And again, I apologize for the acronyms, but we need to be working both with the County Redevelopment Authority and the City Redevelopment Authority to put this land back into production.
So there are parcels. 50 acres is a stretch. So you probably need, as in Little Rock, you need 100 acres, 200 acres that you can take to the ground.
200 would be ideal. And then we could market it.
Well, we don't have a map in front of us, but I'm sure you've looked to see if this is possible. Even.
Yeah, and I think we do have some interesting areas that we're interested in. There's some land along 16th Street that we think could be put back into production. There's some land that Penn State Barrand owns that has some potential. But again, we don't have site control over these properties. And so until the owner wants to do something or a redevelopment authority, it just sits idle.
So you're playing matchmaker. You get the opportunity. Now you've got to convince the locals, industry, education, hey, let's take this 50 or 100 or 200 and create a zone.
That's right. And it's a delicate because we're saying we need to have this land available. But keep in mind, we're not putting any of the risk up on it.
That's
and
right.
So just because I say, hey, we need this, I'm not actually the one exposing my own money to do that. And so we have to find other avenues that can help private business or even the public sector reduce the risk and put this land into production.
I know some folks who are pretty good at renovating industrial properties, but once again, tearing something to the ground and opening up 200 acres and retrofitting it with gas, power, light, electricity, water, particularly. Yeah. Is a difficult task.
It is. And I don't know that anybody in Erie, and I mean the county, has ever been charged with doing that. Okay. And that's kind of, I think, the difficulty. And we probably have less public participation than other communities to do. So oftentimes, a redevelopment authority can tear down the buildings or put the land, rehab the land, or go through the brownfield. And, our county redevelopment authority has done great work, and they're going through a new leadership change, and so we have nothing but great hope for how that evolves.
And I thought they own some properties.
They do own some properties.
Maybe they
own some. They do.
Concept of
they
how
do.
Much they have.
So they have a parcel at the old Hammer Mill site. It's about 13 acres of usable land. We
certainly not 50 or 100.
No, but just because a company says they need 50, that's not always the reality. Even if we could find, but we have that. We have Savakio Business Park. I mean, we do have, of course, parcels that we can try to put into production. We're encouraged with Savakio Business Park with the new ownership, new coalition that's managing that.
Tell
we
us
think
about
some
that. Some folks have not heard about
so
this.
So that's a really, really interesting. The three leaders, Gary Horton, Chantel Hilliard from the Booker T. Washington Center, and James Sherrard from the Martin Luther King Center, have been given site control over that Savakio Business Park. And they're working really diligently, not only to figure out how to put this land in production, that for 20 years has not. How do we create jobs that help their neighborhood residents, mm-hmm. as well as create revenue for their organizations. And I'm very pleased with their leadership to step up and say, we have an asset that we think can help not only our residents, but also our organizations. It's a very forward-thinking strategy.
In your 25 years prior experience, and as you and you are welcome here, thank you for being here. Is it a marketing issue? Do you have to go across the country? Does the chamber need to do a national advertising campaign? Or is it first, let's assemble the product?
It's both. We have to assemble the product, but that's product that's ready. I mean, it's 19 acres that has services on it.
Right.
But again, it goes—
Among other pieces.
Right. Yeah. But it goes back to where I was starting to say, what are the resources to do that? Our organization, I don't think today we have— You know, we have very, very limited resources that we would use to go out and try to market this. That's part of why we're trying to get fully resourced so we can go out and—
Well, everybody believes you put it up on the internet and it's instantly paid attention to. I'm sorry,
and it's
folks. there's millions of domain names online, millions, and you have to attract attention. So you have to have that enticement, you know.
Absolutely.
But we do have one. We have water. So do you assemble a list of – you mentioned you had six – I'm jumping ahead of you. I apologize. You mentioned you had six categories. Those are your enticements, right?
Those are the industries that we can try to make the business case to them why they should be in Erie and that they can succeed. And so it takes really alignment of education, because it's always going to be a workforce development. Can you produce the workers I need for me to grow and prosper?
More than just saying we like to attract metal benders. We have that opportunity, but we also have a potential of 1,000 people to be employed.
Yes. And so it has to be methodical process. Here's where we are. Here's where we want to go. Mm-hmm. These are the steps we take. Because always – keep in mind – there is nobody in the United States waking up today saying, I wonder what it's like to do business in Erie, Pennsylvania, right? Unless they have some sort of a connection here. So we have one of the largest plastic industry clusters in the United States here.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
is that,
of course,
one of your groups?
Is one of the opportunities. Because the other thing, when industry is looking to come into a new area, they don't want to be a pioneer. They want to go where it's already proven to be successful. And so that's how we think about things.
Yeah.
How can we support an industry to grow and support here? So step one, who are they? So, of course, manufacturing, plastics, back office or financial related. You know, we've got, because of Erie Insurance, that spins off a lot of opportunity for other similar industries or support industry.
Yeah.
We certainly are very interested in technology, like all communities are invested in high-tech industry, but we think the niche really here for Erie is more in the gaming. So,
is that right?
Yeah, because both Edinburgh—
I'm not challenging you.
I was Edinburgh
just
and—
Because I think of plastics, and then the next thing I think is tool and die, because you need to make the dies to make the plastic parts. Then I think of transportation, and of course support industries like medical, which we have fine medical facilities here. And high tech, because your tool and die now is all robotic. Well, it's getting to be all robotics and plastics. So the next dotted line didn't go in the direction that I thought would be part of our history.
Yeah, but we have a history of making things.
Yeah.
So we're just going to make different things.
We're going to make different. So you said gaming.
Gaming. So video games, online
games.
Not gambling, but—
I thought you meant entertainment gaming.
No, so we
You're
think there's a really—
You're talking about, one of the leading gamers. Gosh, they just, went to the top of the stock chart, and they've been around Blizzard.
Yeah.
A huge company, and you would think that would be a good place for them here.
We think Erie is a very good place for that type of companies.
That's fascinating.
But we wouldn't have known that if we hadn't done the analysis.
We discovered this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you look at who can build infrastructure? And I'm talking about office buildings because you got all these little four-story, 10,000-square-foot-a-story office buildings at every interchange across Ohio and Indiana. And, you go through an interchange and you see all these office and banks. We have the ability to build that kind of thing here, right? That's a tough question. I'm sorry.
It's not a tough question. It's actually a tough answer. So if we looked around downtown Erie, people would say, what are you talking about? We don't have office space. We have all kinds of vacant office space, which is true, but we don't have office space that's actually usable. I can give an example for our organization, the Erie Regional Chamber. We've spent a year trying to get 5,000 feet of office space just for ourselves in downtown, and that's not been easy.
You mean moving up off the bayfront?
Right. We're moving. So
really?
That's been a challenge for us to find office space. So can you imagine what it's like for somebody who's not even in this market? So we're thinking that we need kind of three demonstration projects. I'd like to see a Class A office building built in Erie. We think we need about 40,000 square feet of Class A office space built.
Now that
in
could
Erie.
Be vertical or horizontal. Yeah. Well, you've got some you've got some land on the bayfront.
But probably vertical. And that's right. There is some opportunities along the on the bayfront as well for Class A office space. Yeah. Two, we'd like to show an industrial development. And three, we'd like to see a multifamily or a housing development, because these are three areas that Erie has not invested in for years.
When you say, you mean a plan of homes? Or...
Right. So you can't show a large-scale housing market rate investment in Erie in probably 30 years. We can't see industrial land development in 30 years.
Or you pick off 50 acres and you build the streets. And you know, now when you build developments as you travel across the country, you can't just build 100 homes.
No.
They put a store, they put a drugstore, they put a retail, and they do it in a very congenial, architecturally friendly space near the development. It's almost part of, and then a record. So when you build a development now, you're building a small town.
You're building... Right, and we have to prove that investment in Erie makes good sense, whether it be industrial, commercial, office, multifamily. And the dilemma that Erie has today is if I was to build a – just say I had my own wealth and I was going to build an office building worth $10 million.
And that's
at the end of the day,
building in 21st century.
It's a meager – but at the end of the day, my building's probably only worth $7 million. And so it's hard to incentivize me to invest in Erie if at the end of the day my investment is worth less than it cost me to build it.
So you're gambling that in 2 to 5 years this will become a profitable
piece of the state. Or we have to have other tools to help close that gap. And that's one – Two different ways. We can use new market tax credits as a way to kind of close that gap. But what we've spent a lot of the last year on is opportunity zones as a potential to close that gap, because that is patient capital that's designed exactly for communities like Erie. And while opportunity zone funding is not the panacea to or the solution for Erie, it's a tool that we didn't have before that potentially can be. We have Erie Insurance has announced that they've created their own $50 million opportunity zone fund. Now, that's not meant just for Erie. It could be their entire footprint over their 14 states or across the country. But that's a $50 million pool of investment capital.
Yeah, they put a good that a dollar amount here.
Didn't exist 30 days ago.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. Well, okay, there's an indication then that someone is really interested. They know from experience this is a good place to be. So there's a value there.
There is a value, and we need, before you can get outside investment, we have to show that we're willing to invest in ourselves.
I get the feeling that there is this energy here. Erie Insurance, UPMC, Hammett, St. Vincent and Allegheny, there seems to be a huge dollar interest in being here.
There's a tremendous amount of appetite and investment going on. I was at a press conference where Gannon University just announced that they had received $2 million for their cybersecurity program. Those are things they're excited to be a part of.
That's here, right on campus. And they've done a nice job in their part of the world downtown. Walked through there yesterday. It's fabulous.
I think the anchor institutions have recognized their responsibility to lead the way forward. And that's why it's a good time to be in Erie.
So you and the chamber board, you get together often, right?
Yes. So we're the board as a whole meets every other month. The executive committee meets with me monthly. They've really allowed me to put together the programs and the people in place. I think we need to be successful. I've added a number of positions since I've been here
to the board,
to the organization.
Just the organization, yes.
Right.
Thank you.
So we can really accomplish the mission that we've been tasked with.
I usually print out the board list every 6 months. I forgot to print it and bring it in. But you should be congratulated because the people, the last time I looked, which was not long ago, you have some incredibly...
We have the right people in our community on the board.
To put it simply, yeah.
Yeah.
You should be complimented by getting so many people involved. I've seen chamber boards in different cities. It's almost a club.
Yeah.
But you have a good sampling of everyone that does something in this community, including small business people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm glad you brought up that point.
Yeah.
So we're
yeah.
often thought of is that we're here to support big business versus small business. And I would say we're probably the opposite.
Yeah.
Our bread and butter is how do we help small businesses grow and prosper in Erie? And
the answer is with that, how big is the chamber? Sorry.
So we're about 1,000 members that we represent about 70,000 employees in the community.
That's pretty good for a metro area of 240 to 250, or maybe it's 260.
It is. I mean, we could always but I've changed.
We can always grow.
We can always grow, but we want to change that our value to the community is not a membership to the chamber, but how do we provide service to the businesses of the community?
Well, you know,
and that
that's
will drive
changed
it.
Over the decades. If you go far back enough, it was a buying group for health insurance. Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
No, that was
there was
the
nothing
boundaries.
Wrong with joining the chamber and then gaining health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
That's a good value to being a member, but that's not what you're doing now. Your forte is economic development.
It is, and I have tried to instill with the team, and I think quite successfully, regardless of what their program function is within the organization, their first priority is business outreach.
Your entire team.
My entire team. Hmm. When they come across a business, it should always be, is there anything we can do to help you?
Right.
And people would say, well, I don't know. How can you help me?
What are some of the categories of service that you have that folks can come to the chamber for you? I'm sure you have a different person for each topic.
We do, but let me just give you a couple brief examples.
Sure.
We have new to our team, Amy Murdoch, who's the head of government affairs for us. And so government affairs to us means many, many different things. Part of it is we met a small business, and his question to us was, how do I do business on Presque Isle? So that's
really
we know how to do that answer. Another one said, hey, I have a question I'd like to ask DEP, but I don't want them to actually know I'm the one asking, right? So we can do that, which is a very legitimate.
Well, he's just looking for information.
Right. And so part of I bet that's our best value is our ability to connect and provide information. So Amy does. Sometimes it's just working with elected officials to understand how business thinks about issues. So we're really growing that. But that's a value advocacy that this community has been clamoring for that nobody was providing as we've stepped up. And one, I think it's our responsibility. If we say we're going to be the voice of business, then we actually need to be the voice of business. Kim Thomas is also a new addition to our team, and she her title is Director of Workforce Initiative. So we know we need to have a role in shaping what the workforce delivery system looks like so our area employers can grow and prosper. But the other half of her title is Strategic Initiatives, which actually means anything we get interested in.
I'm sorry you gave her that job. I'd like that job.
No, and they're both performing. My entire team
both
is
excellent people, by the way.
Excellent people. They're everybody. I couldn't be more pleased.
Yeah.
We had an event in August that we called Homecoming, which was to bring people to our community to show why they should invest in Erie.
Nice.
And I would say there is no organization that could have pulled that off like the team that I have. They did such a great job. Our positive buzz that came about it, the enthusiasm, it was palpable. We had hoped we could get 200 participants there. We had a little over 300 come, and it was learning about what can they do to be a part of Erie. So about a third of those 300 came across the United States.
They came from all over the
country.
Came
all over.
So your marketing efforts did reach countrywide.
It did. It,
And people did come.
They don't. Erie's really being recognized right now as kind of a national thought leader at the forefront as all things Opportunity Zone. And it, in Erie, I don't think they're used to being thought of as a thought leader. But I was just in a panel last week on Washington, D.C. For the Urban Land Institute. So 6,000 people were at this conference. I spoke on a panel that over 400 people participated in, standing room only. Again, wanting to learn the Erie story. And that's our job, to continue to be at the forefront, that we're recognized as a leader. And we are. And I think, you know, I've only been here a year, but I think Erie's not used to thinking themselves as a national thought leader, and they really are.
It's actually an opportunity. The stress is actually an opportunity, right?
Exactly.
Here's the problems. You've identified six areas you could possibly solve them with. You're traveling, and people are recognizing us nationally.
Yes.
If not internationally somehow. What about internationally? That's a tough row to hoe. I can imagine. And as I look across industries in the United States, quite frankly, there is quite a bit of foreign investment.
There is.
You go to Buffalo, New York, some outrageous percentage of the top 10 companies are foreign owned.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just saying this is the observation.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
Foreign direct investment is good a good indicator in your community.
Yeah.
They have a higher job creation normally. And we think there's some tremendous opportunities for Canadian companies to be looking at Erie as a place to set up to make their toehold in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
One of the companies, the last companies I recruited in my previous position was an Israeli-based company. And so you have to have that as part of your overall strategy. But our proximity to, you know, one of the international cities, you know, cosmopolitan cities of the world is Toronto, and showing how they could be a toehold of business into the United States through Erie makes a lot of sense to us.
It's ironic, because if you ever look at one of those aircraft websites where they show, I swear every plane out of Toronto flies over Erie, so I'm going to Atlanta. It's, come down, stop here once, visit us. But so you feel that Canada being that close may be an opportunity?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the mayor's trip to Zibo that he had in the spring provides us a kind of a reinvigorated inroad into the Asian markets. That we actually have a delegation coming from Zibo next week that are looking at opportunities for alignment with the medical facilities and medical education. And then in the spring, we're anticipating a larger business trip, our trade delegation from China coming to Erie. And we're working really closely with the mayor and his team on how we would orchestrate that. So those are, I mean, economic development is two things. It's a team effort. It's not us. It's very much a team sport.
Yeah.
And it's a proactive sport. And Erie has been a reactive, and we need to be proactive.
Well, we'll end on that super positive note, and your assessment and your outline was very, very good today. I'm impressed with how much energy you're putting into all this. But you have a team, an excellent team, as you indicated. You have a good board, and the community seems to support you. I know they do, actually. And we want to thank you for visiting WQLN today. We're going to invite you back again for a part two to this. It's great to have you here, because we get a report every once in a while on what's going on in a very succinct manner. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I always appreciate the invitation.
Donating an unwanted vehicle helps to support the programs on WQLN Radio. Tax-deductible vehicle donations can be made by calling 866-WQLN-CAR or visiting wqln-cardonations.org.
I'm Michelle Martin. These days, it seems like just about everybody is choosing sides and doubling down on talking points. Here at NPR, we try to cut through the noise with meaningful and respectful discussions with people from all perspectives, backgrounds, and walks of life. Join the conversation every weekend on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Saturday and Sunday afternoons at 5 on WQLN Radio.
Hi, this is Jeff Hanley, host of Jazz Happening Now. Each week we listen to some of the latest jazz recordings, and I think you'll be thrilled by what today's jazz musicians are doing and saying. The recording industry has changed, but the music is as alive and as vibrant as ever. The future of jazz is happening right now, if you just listen. And please do.
Sunday night at 6 on WQLN Radio.
Welcome to Week Question and Learn. We've got a couple of gentlemen that kindly agreed to come up to the station to record this program today. The executive director of Perseus House, Mark Amendola.
Thanks
good
for having
to see
us,
you.
Tom.
This is good radio. Still good to see you.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a pleasure to have you here. And Dr. Nick Viglione, the chief educational officer. I like the CEO they put at the end of your name, and don't tell people that stands for educational.
Well, you know, that's just one of
okay?
the things. It's okay.
and your responsibility is the charter school. So without messing up the hierarchy of the organization, I'm going to ask you both how this works. And now
sure.
you're the executive director,
sure.
so could you give
sure.
us the 50,000-foot view of Perseus House?
There's two boards, there's two corporations, Perseus House, Inc., and then Perseus House Charter School of Excellence. Nick is the administrator for the Charter School of Excellence. Let me start with Perseus House, and then Nick will get into the charter school.
Great.
Perseus House has been around since 1971, started with a grant from the Vickery Foundation, and Steve McDermott, who was the he developed the program, went to Erie County to the juvenile court and said, if we took these kids that were experiencing problems in the community, at school, at home, and gave them a home-like environment, could we change their behaviors? Could we help families? Could we help communities? And we still have the house on West 26th Street between Peach and Sassafras, and we have one of our Medicaid programs are there. And actually, Steve and his wife and his son lived in the house for a period of time with maybe 6 or 7 clients, and then developed from that, developed into more group homes. We have properties now we have 98 residential beds. We have a property out in Spartansburg in Bloomfield Township, has two on 10 acres, has two 12-bed units. One is a juvenile delinquency program for females. The other is a Medicaid program, mental health, juvenile justice for females. No, that's
no,
a different.
That's a different,
that's a different program, and I'll explain that.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
And then in Erie, where our main office is located at 1511 Peach Street, which are a central office is, we have a 16-bed shelter that we provide for Erie County, child welfare and juvenile probation, and those are kids who are. May or may not be have initially been moving into the system, but are either waiting adjudication, delinquent or neglected, and or waiting for disposition, waiting to go someplace. We have a 12-bed male unit in that building that is a Medicaid reimbursed program. And when I say Medicaid, what that means is that has to be determined by a psychiatrist to be medically necessary, has to meet the Medicaid criteria for that. So there's 12 males in that program from all over the state of Pennsylvania. We have contracts with multiple counties, MCOs in the state of Pennsylvania. Florence Crittenden, as you mentioned, has been around since the late 60s and originally was designed for adolescents who became pregnant, would go away for a period of time during their pregnancy and then return home. Now it is what we would call a fee-for-service program. So it has a maternity and a mother-baby program. And so we get pregnant adolescents in their second and third trimesters. Ironically, or not so ironically, you know, they don't have a lot of prenatal care. So we want to make sure that it's a healthy pregnancy. And then the second part of that is our mother-baby program. And the mother-baby program is designed to really assess. We have a psychiatrist, Dr. Marian Elbaugh, who actually does a nurturing assessment. And really, you know, can't a 14-year-old, you know, really nurture and care for a baby. But she's going to decide what's going to be the best disposition for that. What's going to be the best environment. One of the things that we're seeing in that program is we're seeing more and more grandparents raising their kids. We're seeing more and more their kids' kids. We're seeing more and more grandparents that are raising their grandkids. And
you serve how many individuals in a community?
On an annual basis, you know, anywhere from 2,700 to 3,000, and that's everything.
I want everybody to understand how a large
from the charter school. We have community-based programs. We have a contract with the county intensive juvenile delinquency program, and those are case managers in schools that work with kids. And the goal there is try to keep them, kids that may be on the fence, as it were, as getting into the system, the child welfare or the juvenile probation, juvenile justice system. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to work with them to keep them out of the system, to keep them so they'll never get open with the system. We have a court diversion program. We have a program where kids go to court and they are typically ordered or deferred or ordered to a facility or a program, but then they come to us on a weekend and we use our 1511 Peachtree building for that program. And programming is Friday after school, Saturday all day, Sunday all day. And then they live at home and go to their home school. And then they're case managed through the course of the week. And the benefit of that is twofold. Number one, they're staying in the community and we're working with them and their families and trying to keep them in school. And it's about a third of the cost or so less than expensive residential care. So, and we've been operating that program since 1996. Actually started in a school, started at Strong Vincent, because the Erie School District is one of the partners, and we actually operated the program on the weekend. And then ultimately we moved from, we were on West 26th Street, we moved our central office to Peach Street. Mm. We then now operate that program. So during the day, the charter school, we have our leadership site, which Nick will explain there. Mm. And then on the weekend, we have the collaborative intensive
and how many, program. I call them students. You know, you laugh when I do that, but that's what they are.
They are. Sure, we're educating them.
How many students are you responsible for? I thought it was about 500, 400.
Well, at any given time.
Special program for the 18, say, 24-year-olds or whatever age.
Well, we could serve up to age 21.
21.
You know, in the charter school, there's up to 600 kids that we could serve, that we could serve. But on any given day on the Perseus House side, we could have, you know, 500-600 kids that we would have contact with. Now, I came to Perseus House in 1994. The vision was that I would not necessarily replicate what somebody was doing in the community. If there are there's a lot of human service agencies in the Erie community. And we took a look at it from a needs point of view. You know, what was the needs of the community? And what was the needs in terms of residential care? My own experience is I worked at Harbor Creek Youth Services for 12 years.
Yes.
I'm a LSW in the state of Pennsylvania, so I've had a private practice. I worked in a school-based program, so I've had a breadth of experience. So I knew, I understood those programs and how they operated. So as we started developing programs, it was really about not replicating what somebody was doing well, but how do we meet that need in the community that may not be
being Steve met. Would have been proud of you.
Steve, I got to know Steve
a
little bit.
Yeah, I did too.
And Steve really had – Steve had an idea. I mean, Steve had a lot of guts. Steve had a lot of courage. I mean,
he did.
Steve did what he did without knowing at all whether or not it would work.
And he was a very caring individual.
Oh, yeah.
He went out of his way. For these young people.
Yeah, so it was his idea, you know. And so we grew. When I came to Perseus House, just to give you a scope, there were 36 residential beds. The budget was about $1 million, and there were 60 employees. Now, between the charter school, Perseus House is about $12 million. The charter school is about $7.5 million, so close to $20 million. And we have about 550, 560 full and part-time staff.
Well, let's think about this so folks who are living here understand. This is $20 million.
Right.
Being
yes.
on something to help improve and protect our community and to advance these human beings.
And different levels, right?
At different
because
levels.
At the
yeah.
deepest end, yeah. We have two enhanced residential programs, one 6-bed, one for male, which is in the 26th Street facility, one for females. And so that's the most expensive, you know, 24 hours a day, therapy every day, individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy every week. You know, versus intensive juvenile delinquency, which is more school-based contact.
Where does that money come from? I know it's a biting question.
Yeah.
Maybe it isn't. No,
it's a good question. Obviously, on the school side, and Nick will explain this more, the money follows the student. So wherever that student comes. Important fact, though, is that we have to live within the confines of our budget. We're not a taxing entity. So if districts come in at an unbalanced budget, they could raise millage. I know boards don't like to do that.
Right.
But... that we have to live within the confines of our budget. On the Perseus House side, It's Title 4E. It's federal dollars. So it's federal dollars that the state pulls down, that the county's budget, they have a needs-based assessment budget process that they go through. And then the other programs are funded per service, which primarily is federal dollars. There's some state dollars, some state match, some very little county match. But for all intents and purposes, it's federal dollars.
And do you fundraise? Do you get to fundraise?
We do fundraise.
Do you?
You know, we certainly haven't done as much as we've done in the past, and you're certainly aware of that.
Yep.
Well, one of the problems was the return on that investment, the return on the amount of dollars that would come in. Has really been very, very challenging. It's a lot of energy and a lot of effort.
Start another radio program and go hours explaining that.
But we do. We do. And even the charter school has received earned income tax credit.
Good. And while we're on that topic, I'm going to let you introduce Nick.
Yeah, Nick Viglione is the CEO, as you mentioned, of the Charter School of Excellence. Nick has very similar experiences as I do.
Mm-hmm.
Worked in residential, came to us working at Wilson Middle School as a case manager, and worked with students on the bubble, as it were, at Wilson Middle School, but also supervise our alternative programs. So Nick has a breadth of experiences.
And Nick, welcome.
I think that if you expand on what Mark previously mentioned, the charter school really is in collaboration with the spirit, the philosophies that of Perseus House. And, I guess maybe let me start from the beginning and do a quick walkthrough to get to current. So I started Perseus House in 1998, and as Mark mentioned, started off as a case manager behavior specialist as Perseus House contracted with Erie, then moved into alternative education. And around 2002, the City of Erie School District was really finding that there were kids that were just not getting their needs met. And the evidence of that was the number of students that enrolled in ninth grade compared to the outcome of that same population in 12th grade. And there was just a big gap of kids that, just were not finding the right fit. And what we had experienced running alternative education is a different way to connect with those kids and meet their academic needs. In addition, though, meet their social emotional needs. And there's where the big twist comes in, so to speak, that, the kids really wanted to stay with us, but alternative ed was a short-term stay. So that's where really the concept of the charter school came. So Mark and Perseus House, in collaboration with the City of Erie, had this thought of, okay, well, can there be a different type of school? Not a school that's for behaviorally challenged kids, but a school that just has a different fit and a different feel, something that's non-traditional. Going back to what Mark said, there's no intention to replicate a system that's already in existence. So what could we do that's different? And that's where the Charter School of Excellence originated from in 2003.
Explain the ambiance. This is where I wish we were doing a television program. It's totally different than anything I've ever seen.
Thank you, because that's really the goal. The goal is to create an academic environment, safe, small learning environment where kids can express themselves, be who they are. And also, the big difference is the way that our instructional strategies are directed, meaning that we have a lot of kids that come to us that are behind academically for whatever reason. Lots of great kids, by the way. Just because they're behind academically, I don't want your listeners to equate that with negative behaviors or negative in any way. There's a lot of very good kids. However, 23% of our kids are English learners, so they are refugees that come in to the States. And there's a rationale as to why one would be behind academically. Some of our kids prior to coming to Erie as one of the resettlement zones really had limited educational experiences.
I hear some didn't even speak English.
We have many students that do not speak English or very limited English.
Limited, yeah. So you're managing them from ground zero.
We absolutely do. Our teachers and our whole environment is really geared towards acquiescing to being a prescriptive approach to kids. And that's one of the mainstays of what we do, that I certainly feel good about working in an environment where the focus is really on students. And
how did you design it? Now, you have a huge, I may be wrong, cooking facility? A huge cafeteria facility?
No, we do. At our Skill Center location, that's one of our high school locations. That's at Level Place on 13th and French.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, that concept really derived from conversations with Mark and our previous associate executive director, who really had this idea of, well, can't we do something that would enhance the skill sets of our kids and bring them into the mix?
It's huge. This is a huge facility.
Yeah, and so what that ended up turning into, Tom, was we created an environment that allows kids high-interest electives. That's really the focus. We're not a vocational school, so it's all electives like you would find in traditional schools. But what we've chosen to do is use culinary as a vehicle to teach kids soft skill development. And there really is the silver lining in the concept.
Isn't that clever? Because you want people to be learning math, English, foreign students becoming what better way? You have to count. You have to become a logistician. You have to understand ordering stock, cooking food.
Absolutely.
Being polite to a customer.
All of those interpersonal skills that, you know, and we worked with Mercyhurst University early on, and they did a study in the community and interviewed and surveyed over 40 hospitality facilities, restaurants, hotels, those sorts. And, you know, hands down, the biggest response from local employers was that we can teach kids the skills that we need them, the tasks that we need them to know. What we don't want to teach is work ethic and those soft skill development. So our whole focus at Skills with that culinary program is really how to be a good worker, how to come to school on time, how to come to work on time, you know, how to call off, how to deal with disgruntled
customers.
How
to deal with other employees.
How to deal with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's the focus of our.
And how large is this?
Well, let me just back up a second.
Sure,
And Nick can explain the numbers. We have a work experience program on the Percy South Side that we've done for 20 years. And, you know, clients have to go through the interview process, and then they're pulled out of school and they work for a full day on projects around the agency. And one of the Phil Treadway, who was a great board member, Erie Mobile Plastics, would say to us, "Hey, I'm gonna have to hire somebody on a mold injection machine, on a plastic injection machine. I'm gonna have to train them how to do that. What I don't want to train them is, just as you were saying, how do you show up to work on time? How do you communicate within a team? How do you, if you're sick, you call in not 2 minutes before you show up for work? How do you engage in those soft skills?" So we put together a curriculum that taught not only those soft skills, but working on the job. We have a worksite supervisor that we budget for, and every client that comes in has the opportunity to engage in that program. So very similar to what we do on the charter school side. The nice thing is that we actually can push kids out in the community. We really don't do that on the Percy South side because they are residential.
Oh, okay.
But we have 40 community partners.
Absolutely.
On your side.
On the charter school side. So
where did the money come for all that geography? You tell everybody where you are, by the way, the charter school.
Charter school, we have two locations.
Yeah.
We have a middle school, which is the Discovery Center, serves students in grades 6 through 8. And we also have the Skills Center, which is a high school serving students in grades 9 through 12. Those are both located at Level Place, 13th and French. And then we have a third site location, which is another high school location serving grades 9 through 12 students. And that's at 1511 Peach. where our central office is located that Mark had previously spoke about.
Yeah.
And altogether,
who designed all that for you? Did you guys do this based on your experience dealing with students, or did you have an outside party?
Yeah, we had.
There is an ambiance to this thing.
We had an architect come in, and from the overarching assumption was that it couldn't look like a regular school to start with.
And there's a reason for that.
Right. Well, because kids traditionally have not done well. These are students that have not traditionally done well.
These particular students need a different environment. Yeah,
to be able to be successful. If you walked through Lovell Place, which I believe you've been through.
Oh, many times.
It's an open-air facility.
Yeah.
We have some closed classrooms, but it's open-air. And, you know, so.
And the top. The field there is more business.
It seems like there's more things to do.
Business, I mean, it's college feel is what the environment is trying to replicate.
Yeah. You have art, but you still have the traditional skills.
Absolutely, right. We certainly do. We have many kids that are taking dual enrollment courses, as an example. That's where students can take college credits while they're in high school.
Oh, wow.
So we have kids that go to Gannon. Edinburgh University comes and we work with them. They provide a class on site for us. So kids are, right now, the class that's being taught at the Skills Center is on sports ethics. So that's the college course that our kids are getting credit.
But you ask about funding. And in most districts, the parent would pay for that dual enrollment class, for that college class.
Oh, wow.
We budget it. You know, as long as students get a C, then we pay for it. So we budget it. We put it in the budget because we have a sense of how many students are going to enroll, are going to get into dual enrollment.
Yeah. So, and the charter school, how's that funded? Is that all under your umbrella? No, it's separate.
So it's two separate. If you think of Perseus House, as Mark mentioned, the Perseus House, Inc., with more of the delinquency and the residential and the preventative courses in schools and applications. And then you think of the other half of the branch is the charter school. So there's two separate boards, two separate funding streams. And
very early, it was clear from Pennsylvania Department of Education that monies could not be commingled. You know, monies had to be.
Okay.
Could not be commingled. So,
and that's good because then you can justify how you're spending the money, and you can measure your outcomes, and then
very clear.
And I think the community should get a little more of an overview of what you guys do because you're solving a huge problem. You hear people complain about dropouts, school dropouts, crime, drugs, and of course you have the cocaine and the other addictions that are permeating the community. You must see a lot of this then. Maybe.
We do. Yeah. I mean, opiate addiction weaves itself into many, many relationships.
Yeah.
And so we have on the residential side, we have Pennsylvania's mandated to do student assistance programming in school, meaning that they are mandated, schools are mandated to provide drug and alcohol and mental health assessment. So Perseus House is not a drug and alcohol provider. We are a mental health provider, delinquency provider. Yeah. So we purchased a parochial school on the east side, and that's where our residential kids go to school. And we have Pyramid Healthcare. We've had a relationship for a long time, so they'll go in and do drug and alcohol assessment. And on the school side, on the charter school side.
Yeah, it's very similar. We work with outside providers to provide any services that our students may need. And we certainly adhere to the state mandate of the student assistance program, which is intended to support kids with those sorts of needs. And, our data shows that our kids are accessing services when needed and moving themselves forward.
We only have about 5 minutes left, but let me ask Mark first. Mark, what do you see the outcome to all the work you've put in over more than two decades and all the hard work you personally put into it? What's the outcome, and where do you see all this going? And, of course, you're responsive to the community, so there's a lot of things you are going to face in the future that are brand new problems.
There sure are.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I think that if we, very generally, as a kid walks through the door, and it's multi-problematic. 20, 30 years ago, there might have been one or two problems. Now it's so layered. There's so many trauma experiences that kids are having right now. And so I think that if we can reduce those kinds of reactions that they have within their interpersonal relationships, And if we can help them heal from those traumatic experiences, they're gonna move into adulthood in a much better place. We use the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. Dr. Felitti and the CDC looked at impact of trauma over the lifespan. And they wanted to see if someone had experienced these traumas, whether it be physical, sexual, emotional, whatever it was, what would impact their physical health. And what they found out was in the initial study, there's a calculator, you score up to 10. Have you ever been abused? Anyone in your family been exposed to alcoholism? 1, right? There's 10 questions, so up to 10. Wow. If you scored 4 or more, you died 10 years earlier than your cohort group. Recently, they just redid the study.
And that is an average.
And if you score 6 or more, you die 20 years more than your cohort group.
Wow.
So when you say ultimately, what are we trying to do? We're certainly trying to make it better in terms of from when they walked in the door. Ultimately, we may be putting years on their lives. What better work could there be to do?
Plus, you're solving a huge societal problem.
We hope it has a ripple effect. Yeah. No doubt about
it. Yeah. And then you move over to the charter school and your objectives.
So our objectives are to...
How are you meeting those objectives?
We're meeting the needs of the students that just simply don't fit well in their previous environment.
And that's not criticizing our other...
I'm glad you said that.
Our other educational facilities are excellent.
They are excellent.
You're not competing.
We're not. And I think that's... I'm glad you brought that up.
You're solving a problem.
We're just another opportunity for kids. And that's not a negative... entity.
No.
It's I use the analogy of somebody going to look for employment. When you go for an interview, not only do you want the company to like you, but you also have to like the company. And you know, that's if you use that analogy, that's really what we're up to.
So you're not competing, you're helping the education system.
We're helping the education system and we're finding success. We've graduated over 900 students that quite frankly may have struggled elsewhere. We certainly are meeting the goals and expectations from our families. They're choosing to send their kids to us. And I think the long-term goal is when kids graduate from us, we want them to be productive members of the community and contribute.
Plus, you're absorbing folks that have come from other countries.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a
they
community.
They're here. They need to be participatory.
And we're providing jobs. I mean,
how many employees do you
have? Well, up to around 554 in part-time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's everybody on both sides.
Yeah, that's a lot of folks.
We're still providing health insurance and benefits and short, long-term disability. So.
Yeah. And you have to be have certain qualifications to work.
You can't just walk in. You sure do. You have to have the ability to work with.
So that the credentialing, the education... And you provide that training as well sometimes?
We do. Yeah. We provide aggression replacement training. We're a national training site for life-based crisis intervention, which is a training for staff. Yeah. How do you intervene? So we do. We do train staff.
A minute left, so I'm going to say thank you both.
Thank you.
It's an inspiration. You cover... I don't think people understand your footprint. It's a Venn diagram. It's a pyramid chart that has... thousands of people involved, and you're solving a huge problem. So we're going to have you back.
The easiest way is to invite you back if that's okay.
And if we could also just mention our websites are full
of
information.
That's what I was going to say. How do you find each of you?
Yeah, PerseusHouse.org, literally P-E-R-S-E-U-S,
House.org.
PerseusHouse.org.
And there's a link to the charter school, or you can look us up at Charter School of Excellence. .org.
And that's a brand name for you.
That's correct.
You are well named. Mark Amendola, Executive Director of Perseus House, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Dr. Nick Viglione, Chief Educational Officer, as Mark called you CEO. You're the boss.
I'm Nick, doing what we do.
Yeah, and I would one last question. If someone did want to come by, whether it be
an educator, a lawyer. 480-5900. That's the central number. Yeah. And all they got to do is ask for me or Nick.
Yeah.
And we'd be happy to. We'd love
and
to
it's a very secure
tour.
Environment. So I know folks have to qualify how they come, when they come, and what they're going to see.
We are more than happy to give
But that protects your children.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said, once you go in there and really see what we're up to.
It's not a walk-in environment for good reason.
Yeah. Right.
But
exactly.
Yeah, so call
but
first.
We give tours. Absolutely.
Yeah. And all that. And that could be anyone from a banking officer to just a concerned citizen
Absolutely.
Or a parent
whoever has
a child
interest.
In need. Right?
Correct.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
You guys are great. Thank you.